Alienated Nation, The New Quest for Liberty. Preface. Why would a scientist and commercial engineer be writing a book about America? Because while I was learning how to create complex manufacturing systems that created jobs for people and made cars and many of the parts that go in them, I discovered a key to sociology. Perhaps even more descriptive would be the realization that the intelligent forces behind national commerce were perhaps not human at all. They were eternal principles that, when adhered to, could create a nation where all beings could have the liberty to reach their highest potential in mortal form. Like the indomitable Coriolis effect, this steady force for dominion over the management of value in our society was withstood only by the rotational coordinates of American willpower. Always in motion, the future is, said the wise Yoda while teaching young Skywalker in the Dagobah system. I discovered that the human race's compunction for tyranny wasn't like a quantum foam of infinite possibilities out of which charismatics rise to lead the lost to victory. Rather, there was resonance working inside the chaos of millions of Americans dreaming large and working calendars rather than time clocks. It seemed like the sowing of America had been rained upon with the inspiration and fearlessness of gods in embryo. As commanded, men did not return rain to the heavens, but rather planted their souls into the ground and fertilized them with sweat and perseverance to produce nearly unlimited bounty. The spiritual rain soaked the seeds of the divine embryo within each of them, and that best part, that part that does the impossible on a regular basis, thrived and walked through the wilderness with wonder and power. I grew up in that rain when it was pure and almost overwhelming. The ideas flowed into my being like sticking one's finger into an electric outlet. The vibration and inspiration flashed like pictures and motions and an interconnectedness that cannot be placed into words. I will make a mortal attempt to translate it for this book so that you can remember who you are and why you are here. There is a reason, after all, that you have picked up this book and are reading these words. Right now, you are thinking, yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Lest you think this is in the slightest ordinary or mundane, I assure you it is not. It is the most extraordinary discovery in the history of the world, and it has the mathematical divinity to save this country, and perhaps even the world, from lemmingosity. When you fill up your car with gas, you feel that we have somehow stepped onto a side road. When you pay your light bill or rub your forehead with disbelief in election results, you feel it. When you are laid off from your job, you feel it. When you walk out of the 1x10³ banks without the funds you need to build your business, you feel it. I spoke to the FedEx man today as he dropped off my most recent order. He looked at my purple 1996 Honda Shadow 1100 and said, I had to sell my motorcycle last month. I'm 50 years old, and I never used to have trouble paying my bills, but now I had to sell it to make ends meet. When you finish this book, I hope you will know that you are not alone and there is something you can do about it. Why don't they see this? My ideas will work. Why are they so stupid? You yell inside your car as you loosen your tie after another fruitless meeting with an investor. How many times have you walked out in the noonday sun and looked up and seen only darkness? How many times have you lurched awake in the early hours with your heart pounding out of your chest, sweating and panting at a lonely realization that you are one paycheck away from being homeless? Unlike the pre-universe void, the solitude in that chamber of responsibility has no peace for you. Fear of failure grips you like a Jehovah's Witness dog that has hold of your cuff. You have experienced this, or you would not still be reading. Well, it gets better, way better. When I was a college math instructor, I had a chance to do something that most of you never get to do. I experienced the beauty and resonating language of mathematics. Oh, I took the math classes, and I received excellent grades. But I did not really understand the beauty and perfection of the art until I taught it to others. I saw that it was about the relationship between values and the patterns and rates of change that allowed energy to resonate into reality. But the chaotic quantum foam of the universe is not a white noise of innumerable values equally struggling for identity in an eternal sea of unknowns. Far from it. There are limits to resolution, and with a limited resolution, there needs be a limited universe. I saw that the great physicist, Sir Roger Penrose, was mistaken. It was not that consciousness was the result of quantum gravity. No, no. It was quite stunningly the beautiful opposite. Quantum gravity was the result of consciousness. When I was getting my education, I signed up for calculus, like many of you. After 3 weeks, I dropped the class. The instructor was brutal. The student body called him No Mercy Circe. I almost changed majors, but my love for chemistry drove me through my state of despair until the next semester. I made another attempt, except this time I walked into a room with a sweet and gentle genius of an Indian professor who taught mathematics like it was music. His understanding of the language was not like that of a drill sergeant whose awards came by how quickly he could bring a student to tears. Oh yes, there is crying in mathematics, but rather more like Magister Ludi. Each concept was mastered and then inserted into the next concept and so on. I not only got an A in the class, I knew the material. I could hear it, I could feel it. And when I had my ascension experience, I sustained it because I knew the language. With this powerful undertaking, I had a new superpower. I could walk through the barriers between processes in almost any situation. Mathematics bequeaths the knowledge, as opposed to belief, that there is no such thing as being at rest in the universe. That is to say, you cannot determine how fast a train is moving when you are sitting in one of the cars without a window. As a nation, we the people have gone to sleep in the dining car. There are a few masters who figured out how to step outside the universe and consider the resolution of the complete set of energy in the universe, almost without being a part of that set. They are trying to wake us up before the train goes off the cliff. Pretty cool, huh? That is where I'm going to take you. I'm going to take you outside the universe so you can see what is happening to our nation. If enough of you can be shown what is happening between the lines of our agencies and their regulations, you will be able to re-enter the equation of America as a new value and shift the average reality. We need to change the result, because we physicists try to avoid zero and the value of infinity. The soul of man is not alone. It is connected to everything. When we look out into the night sky, we see mostly the blackness of space and a gathering of stars and planets. With our instruments, we have peered deeper into space than most men have dreamed. The pattern continues as far as photons of light can reach the lens. Without making this book about the study of the velocity of stars or galaxies or clusters, it is important to compare the universe to the saga of the human being and its cyclic sociology. Earth drifts in a lazy, perfect ellipse around a main sequence star in the outer rim of an average galaxy. For many centuries, we held that we were the center of the solar system and the universe. We were told by timeless beings from other worlds throughout our scriptures that we were the solitary creation of God. The very statement belies logic. But then, Gnosticism is heresy, is it not? The soul of man is a social being. We can live alone, doing everything for ourselves, but it's a little like owning a classic car that never comes out of the garage. We are designed to be driven. The progress of the soul is axiomatic to existence, whether we are mortal or not. Nothing is at rest in the universe. For man, the drive is to form social groups and to explore great things. Each mortality provides a soul the chance to master new skills with the biological transducer of the body. Now, whether you believe the human spirit gets one chance to interpret the universe through flesh or many opportunities on many worlds makes no difference. The opportunity to deny it will present itself many times, as well as the loss of memory that you ever did so. Once beings form a social group that facilitates procreation, a community with traditions and histories displays a peculiar and yet repeatable pattern. A tribal energy adds something to the social order of the group. Invariably, positions of specialty service are created and filled with individuals in that tribe. The shaman explains the mysteries of nature and performs healing and prosperity activities for better crops and healthier babies. The biggest and strongest man becomes the tribal commander. The advisors to the commander are remoras, smaller fish that swim with sharks to avoid being picked on by other fish. In each social group, there are laborers, midwives, food preparation experts, etc. There are only a handful in each generation who can perceive the universe from outside. They let us know when we have fallen asleep in the train we think is reality. In this one paragraph is the precursor to nations. Again, a grand and terribly repeatable trait displays itself for the history books to record. For millennia, these social groups very soon hammer their plows into weapons and charge across the misty tundra, hacking to pieces the people of other social groups. Gods of one sort or another have commanded whole communities to annihilate other communities, to take their land or their water or their gene pool for their own. The only difference is that now we can make the trip faster, and we can kill thousands with the digital insulation from the nightmare of having the blood of a terrified person splattered upon our face. Oh, and we have added oil to the list of national interests for such activities. I can tell you without doubt whatsoever this one thing. The soul of man was not made for murder. I know that we have all done it, or are in the process of doing it, or will. Eternity is, by design, a very long time. Eventually, a soul will grow to the point where it will not harm the mortal life of another soul. But it takes longer than one might think. It is my assertion that mankind on Earth is stepping through a window of evolution for its soul. Contrary to what you have been told on the cable news channels, there is hope for peace on Earth. Forever, from this point forward. We have reached this precipice before as a race of mortal beings. Man's social zenith has been gleaming in the sun more than once, with bright banners snapping in the afternoon breeze. We have consolidated the leadership to only a few, and then one calm and foggy morning, those men rowed a small boat across a peaceful bay to inform the other social group that this day would be their last on this earth. The race of man has walked willingly off the cliff into the smoke and death of war time and time again. Hopefully, this book will be read in time to turn away.